Good morning, everyone, and I'm delighted to have with us Magnus Groth, the President and CEO of Essity, one of the world's leading tissue and hygiene companies. Thanks very much for joining us. Perhaps you could start by just giving us a quick sort of overview of your main divisions, consumer goods, health and medical, professional hygiene, and just remind us what the key categories for you are.
Yeah. Thanks. These three divisions are very much based on different sets of customers, different go-to-market, and to some extent also different products, but also quite an overlap also when it comes to the supply chain where we see significant synergies. Starting with the biggest segment is consumer goods, where we have the incontinence care, baby care, feminine care, and consumer tissue, and where we are very strongly presented in Europe, in Latin America, and in China and other parts of Southeast Asia. The second business area is health and medical, which is really a jewel in the crown. We have a world-leading position in incontinence care, healthcare, combined with a number of attractive medical categories being compression, wound care, and orthopedic soft goods. This might sound like four quite dissimilar categories, but actually, if you look at it from a user perspective, whether you're a patient or a consumer, typically anyone suffering from chronic conditions, aging, obesity, cancer survival, diabetes, will be using one or typically several of these products. That's about 20% of business. The final 20% is made up of professional hygiene, where we are the world number one in tissue, both in for professional use, where our biggest position is in hotels, restaurants, and catering, so very much impacted by the pandemic, but now recovering fully. Also in industrial use, in healthcare, and also in public offices. Our Tork brand, which is a $1 billion, once you heard it, you will see it everywhere in the world where you go. Now you will also see it every time you enter a washroom or every fifth time at least globally, because we have a 20% global market share. We have three $1 billion brands, Tork being one, the other one being TENA, with our global leading position in incontinence care, which is of course a highly attractive growing category, and the third being the Vinda brand, which is also closing in on being a $1 billion brand and the leading tissue brand in China.
Thanks. Thinking about the strategic transformation that Essity has been on over the last decade or more, it's a business that's consistently pivoted up the value chain, exiting first packaging, then forestry, and then consolidating European tissue before moving into medical solutions. How do you think about that transformation journey, and how much work is there left to do?
There are many opportunities remaining. What we see is that the three segments I just described are all very value-creating and with many growth opportunities. Within each segment, we're looking for the areas with the highest underlying growth, margin potential, and with less capital intensity. If you would look in the consumer part, for instance, we would, going forward, invest less in consumer tissue, more in incontinence care, feminine care, where we see good growth opportunities going forward. One really exciting example is just now the last quarter or the last couple of days when we finalized the acquisition of Knix and Modibodi, two absorbent underwear companies, which we believe are the world leaders in this segment of intimate hygiene, and which is by far the quickest growing segment now, growing at about 20% per year in a category that's only growing 1% or 2% per year. Just one example of a growth opportunity that's high gross margins, low capital intensity. The same in professional hygiene. We supply half of the fast food napkins in this country, but we're continuously moving up to more strategic, more value-creating offerings based on our dispenser system. They are digital sensor-enabled so that you can use them for optimizing washroom cleaning, for instance, patterns. We have many sustainability offerings here that sets us apart from the competition. Of course, hand sanitizers, soaps, skincare is very important now after the pandemic. We still see a higher consumption there. Finally, in health and medical, we have this strong underlying growth from just what I mentioned before, aging populations that want to stay more active even when suffering from chronic conditions. This is actually one of the few areas, especially the medical categories, that are still not that consolidated, where it's still quite fragmented and where we have opportunities to make small add-on, bolt-on acquisitions, and we made quite a few over the last couple of years, Hydrofera in the U.S., ABIGO. We bought Coach Sports Tape that maybe you're aware of. An interesting opportunity, of course, we would like to treat people who are not ill, but to avoid getting injured. That's a much bigger potential than treating persons who are already having a condition. Those are just some examples of opportunities, both organic and non-organic.
When we sort of think about your medium-term targets, I think last year you set out 5% sales growth, 17% or better adjusted ROCE by 25. I think that sales growth target is inclusive of M&A. And should we expect to see further kind of incremental bolt-ons, and which categories do you see as particularly attractive?
So M&A is very high on our agenda. Having said that, we have invested 17 billion kronor over the last 18 months. So we're right now doing quite a lot of integration work. It's going very well. All the acquisitions are performing according to the plan. But I think over the next, I would say, 9 to 12 months, we will focus very much on consolidating our positions, even though M&A is an important part of our strategy. And looking back, we have seen on average around 3% growth organically and 2% coming from acquisitions. Of course, this year, we see completely different numbers coming out of the pandemic. I think so far this year, our growth has been 18% with a strong contribution from pricing. I mean, in the second quarter, we had 12.5% pricing compared to a year ago. We had very positive mix and almost 4% of volume. So this year is exceptional. But in the longer term, I think 5% is something very much reasonable. And then when it comes to the ROCE target of 17%, we're far away from that today, considering the huge impact from raw materials, energy and transportation that we're seeing, especially being very much a European company. About 64% of our sales last year were from Europe still. And then the second half of our sales is equally, you could say, from Latin America, North America, and Asia. And of course, that part is growing faster, so Europe is becoming a smaller part. So right now it could see that it's a stretch to get to 17%, but only in 2020, for those of you who remember, we were at 15% ROCE for over 18 months, and we were on a very stable path to improve by 0.5% to 1% per year based on our innovation strategy, our efficiency programs that we're running. And we had seen gradual improvement year over year over year before, of course, the recent turbulence that we're experiencing.
So just thinking about that bridge of ROCE sort of medium term, is the bulk of that improvement just going to come from, you know, margin rebound and then further margin expansion through mix, or is there work to do on capital efficiency as well?
We're always working very hard with capital efficiency, but having said that, it's not that easy to make a major shift here. So the bulk of the improvement in ROCE will come from margin improvement. And when we achieved the 15% ROCE, our margin was around 13% during that period. So the capital turnover was around 1.1, 1.2. Now, of course, with the inflation, we could achieve the 17% target with the capital base not growing as quickly based on inflation with lower margins. So it would actually make life a little bit easier for us, and that's something we need to take into account now. But in the short term, our focus is pricing, and pricing. And we have very, very strong price momentum, and that's the short and medium-term recovery plan. And then for the long term to 2025, we said that before that, we have our 17% ROCE target. Of course, underlying, we're continuing to work with efficiencies, very much continuing to invest in our brands with new innovative products that our consumers and customers enjoy, that creates more benefits for them, and also continue to invest behind the brands with A&P and and the digitalization and very much with a sustainability profile in every part of our business. So, and all the sustainability work we've done over the last 5-10 years is really helping us now, because we have already reduced our CO2 emissions considerably, and that has meant moving away from natural gas, for instance, in Europe. So we have paper plants now that are actually fueled by biogas. We're using hydrogen and finding new ways of finding fuels for our plants here. So I guess that's a question at some point. We don't see a risk of the gas rationing or a negative impact on our infrastructure in Europe this winter, because we have prepared for this, so we have alternative sources to keep our plants running throughout the winter. And on a side note, but that question comes up all the time.
That's good to know. And just just thinking about, you touched on sustainability and made it clear that's a bit of a priority. What do you have in the way of consumer-facing innovations here, and how much is the consumer prepared to pay a premium for them in your categories?
That was very interesting through the pandemic, that the consumer interest in sustainability and actually true sustainability benefits in consumer products actually increased. There's always been a few percentage points of our customers that have been willing to pay for more sustainable products, but now we can see that also mainstream, there is an interest to pay maybe, let's see now with inflation we're experiencing, of course, and all the short-term challenges, but to pay 5-10% more for something that has clear sustainability benefits. In our case, it's very much focused either on a product that's beneficial from an emission perspective, or that uses less plastic, either in the packaging or actually in the product. And the acquisition of Nix here, that was closed just a few days ago, the absorbent washable underwear is a fantastic example of a big step in sustainability, since the CO2 footprint of a reusable product is so much lower, of course, than a disposable product. But also, actually, our B2B customers are just as interested in sustainability, and sometimes even more, and we see this especially in professional hygiene, where we have a recycling service for paper hand towels that's growing very, very fast here in Europe, and we're now in over 10 countries. And this is something that the customers, it could be a big bank or a big pharmaceutical company or a university, is using in their own sustainability work, that they can show to their employees or their stakeholders that, look, we're also working here, and the recycling service of hand towels is an example. We have signed a contract in Europe with one of the big fast food suppliers to recycle all the paper caps, for instance. We're also recycling for Tetra Pak packs into tissue products. So there are a lot of opportunities here.
So perhaps sticking with that professional hygiene business, how much of a rebound should we still expect to see over the coming quarters? People are moving back into the office still, travel's reopening. Are we pretty much already there, or do you think there's a bit more to come?
Yeah, this is the last of our categories to recover. Our other categories and businesses were actually negatively impacted by the pandemic. And it wasn't the pandemic, it was the lockdowns. When people were confined to their homes, they used a little less hygiene and health products every day, or didn't have access to the medical products that they needed, because the medical part was kind of pushed out by COVID treatment. So we've seen a rebound everywhere, with the exception of professional hygiene, where we're now at 96-97% of the volume from before the pandemic in 99, but it's actually improving very rapidly now, and we believe that by the end of this year we'll be back to 2019 levels, and expect to see a continued growth from there, because there is an increased interest in hygiene also away from home, and we can see that with the data we collect in the sensors, in the dispensers, in hundreds of thousands of washrooms around the world, that actually people are still, to an increasing extent, just entering public washrooms to clean their hands. without using the toilets, which they didn't do before the pandemic. And of course, you know that before the pandemic, about 75% of women would wash their hands after using the toilet and half of the men. So that has also improved after the pandemic. So some interesting...
A happy legacy.
Yeah, happy legacy. Yeah.
So perhaps moving on to consumer goods, that femcare business has performed incredibly strongly for years, you know, especially in LATAM. It's been a real jewel.
Mm-hmm.
Could you remind us what's driving that, you know, and how much more of a growth runway there is for your LATAM femcare business?
Yeah, it's really exciting because it's just such a blueprint. It should be a Harvard Business Review article also, almost. It's one of those categories that's fully penetrated. You have all the global players there fighting for a market that's stable or actually declining in mature markets and growing slowly in emerging markets. And we've just followed the playbook. So we have worked to be very, very visible, very, very consistent, you know, to stick out from the crowd. And we have product superiority. And just doing that year over year over year. This is the category where, even though we are the global number five player, we're always number two or number one wherever we are present. And we are growing market shares everywhere since 5 years back, not only in Latin America, but we also launched feminine care in Malaysia, in China, where it's going incredibly well, and in some other smaller markets. So we have product superiority, and we speak to that year after year after year, and we have very, very good margins. So shows that, of course, it helps if the whole category is growing, but even when it's not, it's possible to be successful. And we just launched now a completely new, we had a product feature called Secure Fit with a shape that was very distinctive and putting us apart, and we just launched a follow-up to that we call Curvy, that's more focused now on multi-fluids, since the consumers are aging, and we see that our consumers are interested in using products that kind of take care both of menstruation and incontinence. We're increasingly moving into away from talking about femcare products and inco products and talking about intimate hygiene products. And of course, what we're also doing in Latin America, we continue to build the brands by adding adjacent products such as soaps, wipes, lotions, and so on, contributing to the growth of the brand, everyday use also, for instance. And now the new addition, as I mentioned, is the washable, absorbent, reusable underwear.
And just turning to health and medical, you know, my sense is that it perhaps took you a little while to really get to grips with that BSN acquisition, but that it's in a better place now. You know, is that fair? And, you know, how do you feel about your performance in that space now?
Yeah, I would say that if you look at the strength of the brands, if you look at the market positions, they were strong when we acquired the company from private equity, but everything else was quite underinvested. So it took us 3 years really to consolidate the brand portfolio, invest behind the brands in building the equity, the product superiority, reorganizing, making sure that we had a go-to-market that was fitting for every channel, because in certain channels, like in pharmacies, we could use a strong presence in incontinence care to bring in these medical categories, while in medical device stores, where we were very strong with the Jobst brand, for instance, in compression, we could bring in the Tena brand, the Inco brand, and it took us 3 years to sort that out. And then during the pandemic, as I mentioned, the consumption of these categories was much lower, but it's really picked up quickly, and there's a huge pent-up demand here. There's a lot of planned surgery, of course, that has been delayed now for years,
yes.
So we're seeing a big pickup in wound care. Many consumers, patients who really are in the need of compression garments because they have venous insufficiencies or problems with their lymph fluids are coming back now. They dare to go to the medical device store or to their other health facilities to fit out the right products. So there's a it already recovered, but we continue to see a high growth here.
Okay.
And we're looking forward to the skiing season for the orthopedic soft goods business. which we miss now for a couple of years. So that will help also the orthopedic soft goods.
The skiing season keeps you in broken legs and arms.
Yeah, very much so. Mountain bike, skiing, elderly people going, being more out and about, that helps our orthopedics business very much.
So I suppose we probably need to talk about input costs, having covered off some of that. But could you just remind us how pulp's been moving in recent months, how we should think about propylene, polypropylene, and then also you touched on energy and that you've managed to repurpose some of your boilers. I think the perception is that, you know, always used to be the case that Essity was three quarters gas, one quarter electricity on the energy side. How's that changing, and how do you feel about gas issues?
So many questions in one. But starting with the raw materials, I think we were incredibly early in flagging inflation.
Yeah.
We issued a general press release in April last year. We never did that before, saying that input costs will increase. We will raise prices on all categories everywhere, more or less. And became the laughing stock of some of our competitors who took this press release and brought it to the customers and said, look at Essity, don't work with them, work with us instead. We will not raise any prices for a long time. And then, of course, it turned out that we were much more right than we could ever imagine, because input costs increased. And then, I mean, since then, it's just been going through the roof, as you know. And, I mean, compared to a year ago, pulp prices are twice as high. Energy prices, as you know, gas prices in Europe are 10 times as high. We were just looking here. In July and August, electricity and gas prices in Europe were twice as high as in the second quarter. So from the second to the third quarter, prices have doubled. I mean, just showing the magnitude that we're seeing here in different input costs. And then adding to that, the transports, of course, also then, and the oil-based materials that have also been going up, partly because of oil prices, but partly also because of a lot of those products going to PPE, and that's actually probably going to give some help us a little bit going forward, because there's less demand for PPE as the pandemic is subsiding, so personal protection equipment, face masks, and so on. And I think we're ahead of the pack. As I mentioned, we raised prices 12.5% in the second quarter compared to a year ago. If you look at the first 6 months of this year, we raised prices with 10.8% compared to a year ago. I think that's more than anyone, and over 6% in Q2 compared to Q1. So with any measure, we have a lot of pricing coming into Q4. This is now happening in waves, both through price increases but also energy surcharges. But we're also converting the energy surcharges into price increases in many cases. And it's going on all over the world. It's been easier in Latin America because it's just a market where they are more used to it. And there's also been less, much less impact, of course, in Latin America and North America than in Europe. But that's why I started out by saying that our three main priorities are price, price, and price, because that's what the organization is very much focused on. So far, we haven't seen any downtrading. We're achieving a lot of pricing with continued mix improvements and volume growth, so I think that's positive. Yeah, when it comes to kind of supply security, we have retrofitted some of our this relates mostly to tissue, consumer tissue, actually, to some extent also the professional hygiene tissue in Germany and Italy, and it may be in France also. We have retrofitted the most important plants with LNG equipment and contracted LNG, so we can run them with liquid natural gas. We have old oil boilers in many of these places that we are starting up again to see that they work. And so, of course, this is not in line with our sustainability targets, but for a very, very short, I mean, if there would be real spikes, we could do that for a couple of days or so. Through this, I believe that we will manage the winter without. A few months ago, I was more concerned. Now I'm not concerned anymore. Having said that, one of our big regional players, competitors in Europe, has had extended stops in the paper machines, and they also press released this 1 or 2 weeks ago due to the high natural gas prices, and we also had one of our smaller competitors, private equity owned, that announced insolvency on Sunday, last week, or on Saturday, I think it was, due to the energy costs.
Yeah.
We are hedged both in natural gas and in electricity to a little over 70%. So, of course, from that perspective, we're in much, much better shape, even though those 30% that were not hedged are painful for us now and leading to us negotiating further price increases and further energy surcharges. But I think there's good momentum for this. All our competitors are doing it, and the customers understand the need for this. So we have huge momentum in pricing at this point in time, also partly because of what I just said. So there are some of our competitors who have problems with the service levels currently, and that's helping us to raise prices.
And are you seeing much elasticity off the back of that pricing? I mean, I guess these are fairly stable categories, and any thoughts as to how elasticity might trend in the coming quarters?
We're not seeing that yet. We haven't seen that historically. Looking back, employment rates are still high. I think these are small pleasures, what we're offering. It's not a big part of your disposable income that you spend on these necessary hygiene and health products. Historically, we've seen some downtrading when there's been recessions in Latin America and so on for maybe 6 months, and then people have turned back to the brands they love, and we expect that to be the case this time as well. So downtrading, we get 1,000 questions about this, but so far we're less concerned, and if that would happen, we have a clear good, better, best strategy. So we have a good assortment in the value tier as well, and we're raising prices in that value tier as well. So we will be there for our consumers, even if they downtrade.
So when we think about that tension between cost pressures but also exceptional pricing, I mean, it seems like you've got two very big numbers there weighing on the margin. How should we think about sequential margin trends from here? We had very modest expansion sequentially in Q2. Should we expect further expansion in the second half, or perhaps some compression given where input costs have gone?
Historically, we never provided any guidance, and then because of the huge uncertainties this year, we gave some guidance for the first quarter, and then for the second quarter, that we would see sequentially improving margins, and we went from 8.2 to 8.3% from quarter one to quarter two. And then we stated for quarter three, similar margins in quarter three as in quarter two. And, of course, we also said that we expect significantly higher input costs in all areas, both sequentially and year over year. And that became maybe even more true than we had experienced, because I already mentioned the increase in energy and gas costs.
Yes.
But we've seen continued uptick also in all raw material costs and transport costs. So it's really across the line. It's continuing. And, I mean, our response is working relentlessly with efficiencies, but also in all the price negotiations we're involved in, just raising the pricing that we're asking for.
Yeah.
So that's continuously ongoing.
Presumably that pricing at this stage won't be in time for Q3. That will be more of a... Or what's the lag?
Of course, when you have very, very significant increase in a very short time period, we can't compensate for that immediately. There will be lags, there will be delays, clearly.
Okay. Thanks very much. And just sort of thinking about margins more holistically, I suppose, you know, clearly we're in some pretty extraordinary times at the moment, but in general, over the last few years, underlying profitability does look to have drifted up across your business in most divisions. Is this better execution, or is it mix, or cost savings, or what's been driving that market?
Yeah, our underlying long-term strategy remains unchanged, that we continue to invest in innovation, building our brands, premiumization, improving the mix, of course, with premiumization also enabling better pricing, and in addition, reducing our overall cost base year over year over year through efficiencies, very much now based on different digital initiatives in our supply chain. And this continues, and I'm absolutely convinced that underlying all the swings we're seeing now in our margins, we have a very strong improvement in our structural margin, because we are reducing costs everywhere, and we are building the brands. And of course, we've had cycles before, nothing like this. And in every cycle, we have come out stronger with higher margins than in the previous cycle. And kind of the profit pool after a period of very high raw materials and energy has always been bigger than what we kind of made before, when prices were going up. So typically, we're able to hang on to pricing and to margins for a longer time period as things start to stabilize or kind of whenever that happens. In the meantime, of course, we continue with pricing everywhere, and that's going well. But underlying, I'm sure that we are improving margins, and that's why I'm confident that we'll achieve our 17% ROCE target also by 2025 at the latest, even though it's coming closer, of course. But, you know, with the swings that we have been seeing, I mean, it will also swing in the other direction at some point. But that's nothing we talk about in our organization. We're only talking about price increases. So it's nothing we're assuming or waiting for or in any way. We have a very, very high sense of urgency in the organization to continue working underlying with the long-term margin improvements, but in the short term, then compensating for the input challenges that we have.
And are there any different dynamics in e-commerce, which I think has started moving for you guys during the pandemic, but it's, I think, grew 25% last quarter? Mm. Are there different margin issues in e-commerce, and how do your market shares and pricing compare there?
So over the pandemic, we saw e-commerce growing quickly. Our strategy is very simple. We should always be over-trading in the fastest-growing channels, because then we grow market share. It's that easy, and over the last couple of years, that's been e-commerce very much. And our belief is that eventually margins will sort themselves out. We can't say that we're not going to be in that channel if it's growing very quickly because margins are poor, because eventually margins will level out. And that's exactly what happened. So today, margins are quite similar in Europe if we sell via a pure player like Amazon or a retailer on their website. I think the only exception that we've seen recently is some of the players growing very fast in China, like TikTok, because they don't have, as you know, any part in the logistics as opposed to then Alibaba and JD and so on. So we deliver directly to customers when they order on TikTok, and this is the biggest, fastest growing challenge currently. So that's a big challenge, not only for us, but I think for all suppliers of products through this channel. So that's an exception. But again, I believe that within a year or two, there will be someone coming in and managing that as well. It doesn't mean that we stay away from TikTok until that's sorted out. So no, it doesn't impact our overall margin development.
And then just finally, because I think we're pretty much right on time, in terms of priorities, I mean, this year it's clearly pricing. But longer term, you know, what should we expect the business to be doing over the next 2-3 years once we're through this?
Over the 2-3 years, continuing long-term strategy that I just spoke about, in the 2-3 year perspective, for sure we will have more of these smaller acquisitions, especially in the medical part of the business where we see the big consolidation and growth opportunities. We will continue to develop our portfolio towards the higher margin parts of the different categories and to grow faster in the overall categories that are inherently then more value creating, like incontinence care, the medical categories, in feminine care, not maybe because it's the best category, but we're so successful in that case, and professional hygiene. And also within consumer tissue, we have to decide what to do with the private label division that we are finalizing the creation of now in Europe, carving out the pure private label part of that business, and how we can also premiumize and stabilize margin in the tissue business, which we very much did already before the pandemic and before the current situation, but we will continue with that work. So, but building the strong brands, that's number one, and staying close to the consumers and customers, that's the key.
Perfect. Thanks so much. I think that's it. But we'll go to the breakout room
Okay.
next door if people have more questions.
Thanks.
Thanks.